This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. You're listening to episode 171 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in crime-ridden Philadelphia.
It seems, David, that when things happen, they tend to happen in Philadelphia, and we've got a story coming up where that's the case.
I cringed when I saw this come across my screen, but you know. What happens in Philly, you know, my hometown. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about the White House and not political. We'll talk about the reviewing UAS rules. We'll talk about drone boxes and a very long article with lots of other cool stuff. Disney drones with airbags. Of course, my beloved city and some Drexel students using drones and thinking that their rights were violated when they got arrested. And some video of the week from Lockheed. And overall, I think we should get started. What do you think, Max?
Let's get started.
Well, our first news comes from our friends at the law firm of Hogan Lovells. Big news, proposed small UAS rule for flights over people at White House for review. I thought this was going to happen in 2017, Max. Where did this come from?
Yeah, I don't know. I think a lot of us thought that this was farther out. But this is a big step in the process of getting towards regulations that govern flight of UAVs over people. And what we have here is the FAA has actually sent in a proposed rulemaking in this regard, and that's gone to the White House Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs, the OIRA. Now, this is it's a committee, it's an organization under the White House that kind of takes first crack at things like this, proposed regulations. And as part of the process, they actually invite interested parties to comment, or actually, I guess maybe more accurately, David, they allow interested parties to approach the OIRA and make their case. So it's a big step forward.
And it's cool. And Hogan Lovells has got a little bit of a background in it because their lead attorney in the UAV division came from that organization. So they know how that procedures work. And good news. I'd like to see maybe it come out of the White House before the 21st of January. So maybe before transitions occur and things get mucked up. It's cool. And I know we've been chafing at the bit for a small UAS rule. So it's, and flight over people, we're going to be talking about Disney later, and they're going to want to fly over people.
That's right. So, yeah, this is an important step. Of course, it's kind of at the same level almost, David, I think, as flying beyond visual line of sight. That's a big one in flying over people who are, the term they use is unsheltered people who are not directly participating in the operation of the drone. Those are kind of the big, maybe the big two. And so maybe we'll see some progress on beyond visual line of sight. Some not too distant future, one can hope.
We get surprised every time the FAA comes along and is quicker than we expect. So let's hope they keep the progress going. And with the new political climate, let's hope that things do not get derailed or sidetracked, etc. The next one, I think you summarized as a wealth of information, or something along those lines, in the last in our pre-show discussions. This was from GPS World. UAV update, fuel cells, drone boxes, and hostile drones. This is kind of a roundup of a lot of little stories that probably make one nice big story. But let's talk about one of your favorite things to talk about, fuel cells.
That's right, fuel cells. Now, fuel cells might be a good solution to the problem of needing more extended flight times for UAVs, right? We have battery-operated UAVs. The LiPo batteries present certain problems, certain challenges, and they don't last all that long, especially when they're used in a multi-rotor kind of configuration. So an interesting distinction is drawn here, a comparison. The article notes that lithium batteries might have somewhere around 150 watt hours per kilogram, but a fuel cell can have something around 1,000 watt hours per kilogram. So we're talking about packing a lot of power into a smaller package. Well, there's a company in Singapore that's been working on this. It's called H3 Dynamics, and they do a number of different things, but they're also an energy storage company, you could call them. And they've come out with this High Wings UAV, which is a concept that utilizes fuel cells. And they claim up to 10 hours endurance for this thing, which is just simply amazing.
Phenomenal. I guess for some of our listeners, this would be a good time for a refresher course. How does a fuel cell work? I know that usually we talk about fuel cells, and I always think about NASA and space stations and water,
right?
Generating water.
Because that's the byproduct. Fuel cells use hydrogen in the process of conversion to electricity. The only byproduct is water, which, of course, is generally considered to be relatively harmless. Fuel cells have been around for a long time. As you know, David, they were used in the space program. There are some commercial applications. There's actually a Cabela's store, which, if you're not familiar with that, it's think of a giant sporting goods kind of a store, not too far from us here. In this particular location uses, I think they have three big fuel cells outside that power the whole store. And again, you just keep feeding them hydrogen, and you vent the water vapor, and you get your electricity. So this is a pretty, I think, important demonstration if this thing is as practical as can be. But H3 Dynamics is also doing some other things. They have this thing called a drone box.
This is kind of cool. And I think we've talked about something like this in the past. When we're talking about precision agriculture, which we had our last episode where we were talking about precision agriculture, imagine you need to have a quadcopter do thousands of acres. We were talking about large farms where we're talking thousands of acres. H3 Dynamics has created a drone box. It's kind of a remote base station, as we would say in the military, a forward operating area or a forward base. And basically what would happen would be your little quadcopter would do some of its run, but as it was running out, it would land on the drone box, and the drone box has got solar panels and would recharge the battery for the drone. So you have a drone base, kind of a remote forward operating base for the drone, and then once it was fully charged, it would take off and continue its agriculture mission, whatever that may be. Crop surveys. So this is kind of cool. You've got a little airport or drone port out in your field that is the drone can dock at and go forth, and you don't have to worry about it coming back and losing all that additional time.
Yeah, this is a great idea for autonomous drones because, yeah, as you say, they don't need to come home. They can just actually stay out there, positioned where they need to be in the fields or in the areas where they expect to be operating. They can fly their missions, come back, recharge, download the data, and basically just reside at that location. So that's it's a great idea, I think. It's got some great practical applications.
So another story in this was from Ebit Systems announced its ReDrone. And this is, for every drone, there's an anti-drone technology. And this detects, tracks, and takes out drones.
Yeah, they actually use some radio frequency detection technology so that they can monitor the control transmissions from the operator as well as what the drone is broadcasting back. And it can actually, according to Elbit, determine the direction of the drone and the operator. This thing would provide real-time situational awareness, and it can detect multiple drones at the same time. So here again is another interesting system, like you say, David, for watching for drones.
It's funny, we even get solicitations for companies that want to talk about their anti-drone products on our show. So it is kind of funny that we've sort of become a weapons struggle between the drones and the anti-drones. And it's very interesting that this whole additional field has developed for UASs. So, but let's talk about one more in a positive thing, which is General Atomics, which makes our beloved Predators and Reapers, have modified their Predator C Avenger UAV, and they're offering it as what they call Angel One for humanitarian missions. This is really kind of cool. I like the military drones are becoming more positive. Instead of firing Hellfires at bad guys, they'll be dropping HDRs, or humanitarian daily ration packages.
And quite a few of them. The article points out that this Angel One can carry as much as 8,500 pounds of humanitarian aid packages. So that's pretty significant. And I agree with you, David. This is kind of a really great thing that General Atomics is, you know, thinking about this kind of application and offering up this this Predator C. So good for them.
And the Predator C is a jet. It's not a right. It's not like the Reaper or the Predator. The Avenger C, even though it is, they call it a Predator C. It is a jet and is substantially larger than the Reaper. So it's been a project for General Atomics to market to the Pentagon and the Air Force, but it's been really a company design, not necessarily a requirement from the Air Force. So they're taking what they've learned and they're adding it to a civilian environment. And just think of what they could have done with it down in New Zealand after the earthquakes, all of the stuff that they're trying to drop into supplies, etc., to remote places. So not that I would recommend HDRs for anybody or MREs. They're not necessarily the best, but they're a hell of a lot better than they were when I was a kid. But 3,400 people is for a disaster area would be really, really awesome.
Well, there's one other item quickly from that article, and this is on AeroVironment. And they note that they're looking to enter into the commercial market, and they've developed the Quantix vertical takeoff and landing quad rotor drone. Interesting, controlled with an Android tablet. This is also designed to process data through the AeroVironment Decision Support System, which is a cloud-based platform. So interesting that AeroVironment is, you know, looking at the commercial market now.
This is interesting because I was interviewed by a college about talking about hacking and drones, and cloud-based data from drones, it's kind of scary a little bit. You know, we talk about people who've had their photographs or their lives taken from the cloud and put all over the internet, wondering how quickly a cloud-based system might get a drone hacked. Hopefully AeroVironment is looking on that, but that's one of those kind of worried about having all that data up in the cloud to operate a UAV.
Data security, it's a big issue.
Big issues.
How about issues in Philadelphia?
Yeah, you just love this, don't you?
Yeah, I know.
We had protests due to our recent election at one of our downtown. In Philadelphia, we have an area that has Drexel University and the University of Pennsylvania. And a drone was observed filming the 300 protesters as they were marching towards City Hall. Well, overflying the protest were three news helicopters and two City of Philadelphia helicopters. So there was a man operating a quadcopter from a rooftop videotaping the protest.
And didn't they discover him by through those helicopters? They followed the drone back to the rooftop?
Right. If you're going to do this, don't have the drone fly back to you because
you'll get caught.
A SWAT team took out the 20-year-old man. He's facing charges, and the FAA is thinking about charges. Now, I'm good with that. What was really kind of frightening about the whole incident was he proceeded to say that his civil rights were violated, his First Amendment rights were violated because of him flying a drone. He was just videotaping it and the protest. Little did he know that he was flying it above 400 feet. He was flying it within 5 miles of an airport.
over people.
He was flying it over people. He was recklessly endangering helicopters. So he is actually pressed. The City of Philadelphia have pressed reckless endangerment charges against him today as we record this. And it looks like the FAA might follow suit also as a kind of an example. So as usual, if it's bad news, it's going to come from Philly or Philadelphia International Airport. At least that's been my experience over these years.
Yeah. All right. Well, why don't we move on from Philadelphia and some bad behavior to Disney and some really interesting behavior.
It's a drone world after all. It's a drone world after all. It's a drone world after all. It's a airbag-equipped drone world.
Very strange, yeah. So this is Disney. This is from Wired Magazine. Disney's latest attraction, ? 300 drones flying in formation. What's going on down at Disney?
Well, 300 Intel Shooting Star quadcopters with LED lights. We've seen this Intel in some of the videos of swarming. I mean, the technology is swarming. And these little things weigh a little over a half a pound in soft frame constructions with plastic and foam. And they're going to do Starbright Holidays in Orlando. They're going to be a night pyrotechnic show without pyrotechnics. Or kind of like a laser light show. But these are kind of cool. And it's, well, we've always liked the swarming technology. And it seems to be getting very sophisticated very quickly if Disney's perfectly willing to fly 300 drones over their crowds.
Well, and how these work is, I think, fascinating. It's pointed out in this Wired article that these drones, which, like you say, they're swarming, and so they're creating these images in the sky with their LED lights, they're not pre-programmed, per se, to perform this demonstration. What they are is they're queried before each show, and various characteristics are determined for each drone, like what's the battery level for that drone and the GPS signal and so forth. And then it kind of real time, kind of just before the operator presses the go button, each drone is given its specific instructions about how it's to fly. Which I thought that's really kind of interesting, David. I sort of assumed that, you know, it would all be pre-calculated and pre-figured out. Each drone would have its own little, you know, unique instructions set ahead of time, but it's much more dynamically set than that, which I think is interesting and has some implications for, you know, other swarming technology applications, I think.
Yeah, and I was sort of surprised too, because I was thinking it was along the lines of a technology that we had on C-130s back in the late 60s, early 70s, called a ski antenna, which was a station-keeping antenna, which if you were flying C-130s at formation over long distance, your lead aircraft would set up a signal and everybody would key off of it using their ski antennas, and the ski antenna would tell the pilots that they needed to keep X distance and they were this far apart, and it kept you in formation and it took a lot of the pressure off of flying the unit in formation. Well, this is not really kind of, the drones aren't interacting with, they are interacting with each other, but they're not electronically interacting with each other. So it's all done by the base control. So it's not what I was expecting either.
Now, where do the airbags come into this?
Well, what happens if one thinks about falling out of the sky or loses its signal? A follow-on story came out of the Orlando Sentinel that they have produced a patent request for, I guess, an inflatable bubble over these things that if it starts coming crashing down, it will put a protective bubble wrap around it, expand around it, so it will bounce. And if it hits somebody, it'll be a nice, light, gentle hit to avoid people, places. You don't really want a drone to fly into one of the buildings in Disney, you know. There's a lot of things to protect in Disney World and Disneyland. So this was an interesting follow-on story. It looks like Disney's really seriously considering this. And it was interesting on our Slack team, one of the conversations that came out of this is this the end of fireworks? I don't see that happening. Disney's fireworks are amazing that they can do that every night. But it's interesting that will this replace fireworks? So I don't see that happening in the near future. I think it'll be another event like the Electric Light Parade or something that Disney will add to the repertoire. But some other people say, wouldn't it be kind of cool to have these fireworks displays on 4th of July over the Hudson River? So another reason, a very interesting conversation on our Slack team. So another reason to become part of our Slack team. And you can do that by emailing Max or I at theuavdigest.com and say, can I join the Slack team? And we'll be happy to add you to the team.
All right. One more news story, David. This is coming from Lockheed Martin.
And this is actually sort of our story and our video of the week. PRNS Newswire said basically human-machine teams, Lockheed Martin, UAS, and optionally piloted helicopters validate firefighting search and rescue capabilities. Up at the UTM conference up at Griffiths Air Force Base, or what was Griffiths Air Force Base, Lockheed Martin used one of their K-MAXs to demonstrate a search and rescue mission, as well as integration with a fire team. And there's a couple of things going on. The Cayman K-MAX has been the first real optionally manned helicopter, and we know that they use them in the Marines use them in Afghanistan for resupply. Sikorsky has Sarah, which is the autonomy and research aircraft, which is a UH-60 Black Hawk. That is going to be optionally manned. And they've used a Bell Jet Ranger also as an optionally manned aircraft. And a couple of other ones, the Indico Quad Rotor and Desert Hawk 3.1 fixed UAS. So optionally manned is the way to go. And the Army really, really wants optionally manned aircraft because they're getting more bang for their buck. And if it's a security issue where we're risking pilots, they'd rather have it be a UAV unless it's a mission where you need a man aboard. So I like optionally manned. It's the best of both worlds.
And sort of the exciting part of this little demonstration, well, it wasn't so little actually, is that you have all these different vehicles, these autonomous vehicles, working together to affect a firefighting operation and a search and rescue operation. So it was kind of fun to watch the video and see the, what was it, the K-Max that picked up the water?
Yeah, the K-Max was the one that did the water drop.
Did the water drop to put out the fire, and then you have, the other vehicles with roles in this situation, too. So integrating all of them, of course, is the difficult part. Each solitary mission, it might be a challenge, but it's not so difficult compared to the integration of all of those. And, of course, Lockheed Martin is one of the great integrators of systems out there these days. And so I think this is kind of a significant demonstration of what's possible in the future.
Yeah, and it's interesting that we were demonstrating something that we've been over the summer season talking about how bad it is, drones over fires, but this is how it's done right instead of people taking pictures. So
with that, we'll start to bring this one to a close. We want to thank all of you, as always, for listening to the UAV Digest. You can find us at theuavdigest.com. We've got show notes for each of our episodes that you can find there. So if you want to go straight to the show notes for this one, it's theuavdigest.com/171. We'll have links to all the news stories that we mentioned this episode.
And of course, you can interact with us on our Slack team, like I said before. You can find us on Twitter. Oh, and congratulations to Max and I. This week, we went over 10,000 Twitter followers.
We did. I didn't even notice.
Yes. Oh, so wow. we have a big Twitter stream now, and that's at UAV Digest. You can find us on Facebook at UAV Digest. And, of course, we'd love for you to leave feedback for us. You can email us at feedback@theuavdigest.com or go to Stitcher or iTunes or Google Play and leave us a review. That way other people can find us. It only takes a couple of minutes, and Max and I would greatly appreciate it because it keeps us in the forefront of being in the drone universe. And of course, you can buy some swag. The holidays are coming at our Cafe at Press store, or you can sponsor us at patreon.com. And all of those links will be on our show page, which is theuavdigest.com. So I guess with that, I will say happy Thanksgiving to all of us here in the United States. This is David in Philly where we have drones being arrested.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening.